welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
And I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2003, Katie, was suspended for 7 games without pay for confronting and threatening a referee after a game Wednesday night, whatever that means, outside the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon. Katie, you might say, wow, that's a little aggro from Rasheed Wallace. What's he doing confronting a ref outside after a game? As it turns out, this referee was Tim Donaghy. So Rasheed Wallace, very much in the right to do this, saves himself here. Stu Jackson, the NBA senior vice president at the time, said he accosted a referee and threatened him. Didn't offer any more detail. But frankly, I think he should have threatened Tim Donaghy harder. Maybe that would have made Tim Donaghy stop being such a piece of shit. Katie, thoughts on this Sheed tale from this day in 2003, 19 years ago?
I feel like Tim was probably just double parked or something. And Rasheed was like, hey, can you move your car? Man, I've been stuck here waiting for you this whole time. I got to go.
Yeah, why are you in the accessibility spot, you piece of garbage? We see you're just fine. Boy, fucking Tim Donaghy. Never a good thing when he comes up in NBA history, but glad that Rasheed Wallace cussed him out. What do you think Rasheed Wallace said to Tim Donaghy? If you were to like try to quote back what he would have said, is it safe for air? And do you think there was like any sort of specific lean to it? Did he get personal with it? What do you think Rasheed Wallace did to Donaghy to get 7 whole games?
No, honestly, I think it was something not even probably game related. And Tim Donaghy was just being like, oh, it's confrontational because he's like talking to me outside of a game.
Right.
You know, because like at this point, Rasheed had that reputation and like, you know, refs really maligned him. So I think he just saw Rasheed coming up to him and maybe he was just going to ask for maybe he wanted direction somewhere. Did you say it was an away game?
No, it was in Portland, so he would have been on the Blazers still at this time. Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he just had a question, and like some people are like are just naturally like wimps like that. You know, if someone asks them a question, they're like, "This is a confrontation."
Right. Yeah. Well, Tim Donaghy, as it turns out, he was the loser in this situation. Even though she got 7 games without pay, it was Donaghy in the end who was on the wrong side of history. So that's a pretty good way to lead into today's episode, Katie. Otherwise, how are you, Katie? You had a big week. You were in the Toronto freaking Star. How did that feel?
Felt good, man. Yeah, it was great. Was kind of surreal and like, you know, pretty exciting. This is a newspaper that I grew up like reading and having like come to my house every day. You know, it was the newspaper I like voted in the contest to name the Toronto Raptors. And then I wrote the cover story for the Sunday sports section. So I don't know, it was pretty chill. I want to also give a shout out to your dad for getting me a sick version of that paper. That's so nice.
Yeah, my dad works at the press that prints the Toronto Star, so he was watching those things fly off the printer or whatever it's called. I don't know. I don't listen to him when he talks about work. But that's the one perk of having a dad who runs the press where the Star is printed is he can just grab stuff. Currently in my office, I'm looking right now at my big framed thing I have of all the Toronto Blue Jays newspapers from their playoff run in 2015. Got the bat flip. Got actually they got 2016 as well. Edwin Encarnacion with the world wild card walk off home run. These things are not things that you care about as a baseball hater, but that's fine.
Yeah, crazy that you managed to flip that to baseball. But I won't let it bring me down.
Yeah, well, one day, Katie, you will cover the sports Toronto Star sports section with a baseball tale as you've been indoctrinated into the land of baseball. But that's for a future time. Everyone, go read Katie's piece on Marie Holloway, Kyle Lowry's mother, and her split fandom between the Heat and Raptors and her wonderful engagement with Raptors fans online. Everyone, go check it out. I can't get you a nice copy like my dad got for Katie, but you can go buy one and support Katie.
You can read it online, too.
Yeah, you could read it online. That's right. But buy a hard copy. Come on now. It's rare. I was one time in the Globe and Mail, and wait, was it Globe and Mail or National Post? Either way, they didn't pay me for 6 months. I'm never writing for them again. But either the Globe and Mail or the National Post, I was in one of those. I wrote a piece about standing at the bus stop for some reason. I don't know. So they reach out to me like, hey, you want to write this like a little like lifestyle piece? I was like, sure. And I picked that up and I kept that copy. You got to do it. You got to pick up the hard copy. There's not so many hard copies left out there in the world. Got to pick it up when you can. Anyway, Katie, we've reached the halfway point of the NBA season. And so on today's show, a bit of a different format, a bit of a different kind of episode, where really it's all just one big segment we're trying out this week because we got some awards to hand out. And no, you're probably sitting there thinking, oh God, another NBA podcast giving out mid-season awards. Do I really care who's the MVP after 41 games between Nikola Jokic or Giannis Antetokounmpo? Do I really give a shit that Evan Mobley's going to win Rookie of the Year? Of course you don't. We're not going to be doing that. We're doing much cooler awards on today's show, Katie. The awards that matter, things like Dunk of the Year, Best Performance by a Mascot, Coolest and Corniest Teams, Best Beef. We got a whole bunch to get into on today's show with your mid-season version of the Ubbies. Katie, before we dive into this, just some general thoughts, I suppose, on the first half of the season. Any grand takeaways that maybe won't be brought up over the course of our award dishing out today? Just sort of a wax poetic, I guess, now that we've reached the halfway point of the season, which seems kind of impossible, but hey, we're here now.
It is a little impossible. I did radio last night, Show Ali mentioned that the Raptors, you know, he said like how many games the Raptors had played and how many games were left in the season. And we were like, oh, right, it's halfway. It doesn't necessarily feel real. It feels like it's been pretty quick. And this is also like a quote regular season. You know, I think after two seasons of disrupted or like delayed start times, it is weird to be going so quickly through a regular season, but here we are. What we're not going to talk about, I guess, is the NBA's continued mismanagement of certain things.
Yeah.
And its relentless need to push ahead.
Yeah.
Because I think time is kind of on the side of the NBA in the sense that time's melting still, like in the pandemic. So the NBA doesn't really need to work that hard to make us forgetful and kind of complacent about it. But yeah, man, I guess, I don't know. My hope is we'll get to the brightest, most hopeful, happiest moments today, and we can try and focus on that for a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can certainly do that. The NBA continues to trudge along, and there's nothing we can really do about it at this point except acknowledge that the NBA ain't no different than any other sports league, and they're not special, and they're not the good league by any means. They're just a league in which basketball takes place in exchange for money. But there are some good things that happen throughout the course of that. As we talked about last week, the regular season is a beautiful, rich ground for wonderful storylines and things to keep an eye on. And of course, of all those storylines, of all those events, there are the best and worst of those things that we're going to dive into on today's episode of the podcast. But before we do that, just a reminder, you can go to patreon.com/abasketball. If you go to our Patreon page and support us, it's $4 US, $5.50 Canadian. You get into our Discord chat, you get first access to asking mailbag questions, you get to vote on things like which movie should we watch, which will be a Patreon episode we do, I believe, next week is in the cards. So that's something to look forward to as well. We will get a Patreon poll up there very soon with the movies that we could potentially watch and dig into for your listening pleasure on the Patreon. Plus, you get access if we do events like trivia nights and things like that, which we should do one of those pretty soon. Maybe something around the dunk contest when it comes up soon. I don't know. I'm just spitballing and planning content on the podcast, Katie, because I'm a professional. But anyway, patreon.com/upbasketball with two H's is the place to go to support us. And we appreciate you so, so dearly if you are one of our Patreon subscribers. And perhaps you're looking to gift a subscription to somebody or force them to listen to the podcast. You can always go and do that in Patreon as well. Thank you in advance. All right. Without further ado, let's get to it. It's the mid-season version of the Ubbies, coming up in just 1 second. All right, Katie, it is the Ubbies. It is a one big long segment we're trying out this week where we are handing out awards for the coolest, the best, the courtiest, and everything in between in the NBA so far this season. Katie, I guess we should start with maybe the most important of all of the awards. You know, they start off with a big, what do they usually do, like supporting actor or actress to begin the Oscars? You got to start with a big one to get people riled up out of the gate. And for me, dunks have always been what basketball is really about. I think dunks should be worth 3 points. I think dunks should really be the only allowable scoring vehicle in the NBA if we were living in some sort of basketball utopia. We are not, of course, but that doesn't mean there aren't great dunks every single night in the NBA. And so the first Ubby we're handing out is the dunk of the year so far through the first half of the season. Katie, do you have contenders for this one? Do you have one clear favorite? I personally have one clear favorite, and I don't even think recency bias is to be considered in this one. Like, I think just a very recent dunk is the dunk of the year. But what say you, Katie? What do you have for dunk of the year so far in the NBA?
This is tough because Jared Allen has had quite a few sleeper dunks, I would say, because sometimes it just seems so every day what he does, right? You know, you just kind of forget. He's had some like weird one-handed, like floater, like hook shot looking dunks that look like nothing, you know, but I can't imagine anyone ever doing them. What do we got? Anthony Edwards has been dunking around. Ja, of course. This is a bit tougher for me, honestly.
Yeah. It is tricky. That said, I think for me, I have a pretty clear one. And I want to dig into this dunk kind of in depth because there's a lot of layers to it, Katie. Russell Westbrook earlier this week dunked so hard on Rudy Gobert that there's just a lot tied up in this dunk, Katie. To me, it is clearly the dunk of the year. It was nice to see Russ bust out like a vintage version of Russ as well after kind of being this little sad version of himself all season long with this Lakers team that is just not at all conducive to successful Russ. Katie, your thoughts on this being my clear dunk of the year? I don't even think it's actually a competition.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, mostly because I think I'm always convincing you to like Russell Westbrook and take him seriously. And I know producer Greg is on my side with this. We are two absolute Russell Westbrook supporters in all things. So right. I'm just going to like toss out all my other inclinations and leanings and faves out the window for this. Yes, I agree with
Beautiful.
You. This is the clear award winner.
I'm sorry to Jared Allen. I mean, if we were going on just like pure volume of sick dunks, he's probably the winner.
I mean, Jared's going to have more.
Yeah, he will.
That's the thing.
Yeah, certainly.
Jarrett will probably have the dunk of the whole regular season, right? But like, yeah, this was a culminative dunk. It was building. It is kind of like all the perfect things about a dunk to me, which is like sometimes you got a little revenge in there. There's emotion. You're like really being emphatic and kind of putting a point on everything that you possibly can. And like you said, you're kind of destroying Rudy Gay in the process. So that's not Rudy Gay. Rudy Gobert. I'm sorry, Rudy Gay. I don't want to destroy you. I actually love you so much. You're destroying Rudy Gobert in the process.
Yeah, yeah. It's just such a beautiful instance, and really anything where Rudy Gobert is on the receiving end, I'm kind of a fan too. Like, I don't know what it is, man. Do you have any theories as to why Gobert is so disliked? Like, I maybe it's like the COVID Mike Touchy stuff. Maybe it's the crying over not being in the All-Star game. Maybe it's the general complaint about referees. There's lots of different reasons, I suppose, but like it feels like lots of other guys do plenty to piss people off as well. They don't get near the same vitriol or the same sort of like level of targeting of their head top by potential dunkers. Feels like Gobert's getting dunked on all the time, despite him being an incredible defensive player, of course.
I think he's just kind of smug. I think Americans don't like French people, so there's that. And then I think Rudy Gobert certainly leans on his Frenchness. Though I will say sometimes I think that's funny. I got nothing against French people. But Rudy, for me, will kind of come back around and have these glimmering moments of like humanizing himself, you know, or I can kind of relate to him in some ways. I mean, also when, yeah, you're like the lead player and like blocks and really like shutting people down. Like your whole job is just to shut people down. So fans are going to hate that because they don't like seeing that happen to their team.
Yeah, that's totally fair. All right, let's go carry on to the next of the awards here, Katie. We got a lot to get to. We don't want to spend too much time on one, even though I could talk about Russ dunking on Rudy Gobert all day long. Coolest team, Katie. We discussed the coolest player, and that will come up here in just a second, a couple weeks ago. But the coolest team. There have been a lot of teams that have been surprising upstarts who overperformed, who do cool things, who have cool players. I think there's probably like a short list of candidates for this one. But for you, what is the coolest team in the NBA this season?
I know like Grizzlies are certainly up there. But that to me seems like an obvious cool. Maybe we talked about this when we were talking about coolest players recently. You know, it might be the Cavs, just because, like, to me, they embody a lot of, like, the low-key cooler things about a cool team, which is they care about each other, they're very happy, they're nice to one another, they're, like, trying something new, they're just, like, a gigantor lineup, and it's working, they've got confidence in themselves, and I don't know if I said already they're having fun, but they're having fun. These are, like, the cooler things about being cool to me. And they're trying, which again sometimes gets maligned as like, if you are cool, you don't try. But that's not true.
Yeah, the Cavs are, I think, certainly would have been on my short list for sure. I think the fact that like Kevin Love has come around to sort of be this like, and he's going to come up later for me in this episode as well, but the fact that Kevin Love has come around to be this sort of like wizened aged veteran on this team is really cool. He's kind of bought in after, you know, last year throwing tantrums and like purposely throwing the ball to the other team at times. It's been a nice little renaissance for him. I think Garland and Allen and Mobley as like a 1-2-3 is incredibly cool and funky. I think the fact that they're playing a different style and just saying, you know what, we got two centers you can't score on, good luck. I think that rocks too. I love stylistic variation around the league. So they're certainly on the short list. I think the Grizzlies, like you said as well, are very much a contender here too, just because Ja is just so singular and Jaren Jackson's been awesome and Desmond Bane's kind of become this incredible story. They're really cool. Although I find Taylor Jenkins, they're obviously a very good coach, to be a bit of an herb. So I don't know if I can totally go in on the Grizzlies. Here's a stealth pick for you, Katie. What about the Charlotte Hornets? They throw all the dunks. Yes, they have Gordon Hayward. Not cool at all. I don't know if I think Terry Rozier is cool or not, but like the duo of LaMelo Ball and Miles Bridges on its own might be enough to get this team to the award here. Maybe that's just focusing too much on two guys. But what do you think about the Hornets as a potential stealth candidate for this award?
Yeah, spoiler alert. I recently interviewed Miles Bridges and ooh, he's wonderful. And I do really like that team. That team to me, super cool because they're doing things they're like not supposed to be able to do. I mean, even Miles Bridges, like you watch him play and you forget that he's 6'4". Like you're like, he must be 6'9", right? Like the caliber and frequency of chase down blocks and dunks that he's able to pull off just without any effort whatsoever. It's wild. And like, I'm not being like, he's short, because he's not short. But for someone to just have that kind of explosiveness, and the whole team is like that, right? They're kind of like out of the mold, kind of wily group of guys. They're like the fastest. I mean, it's so lame, but like, I will admit the coolest teams and like the most fun teams for me to watch are often the fastest teams. I know doesn't necessarily trickle down to a lot of the other skills that a team needs to win, but like they are number one in pace. Their offense is just like out of control. There's some things they need to work on, but like, I don't know, you just watch them, like all of those kind of behind the back, crazy no look passes. They are a very cool team. But if a team was like cool on TikTok and then a team was cool on like a wider platform, they're like a cool TikTok team. I'm not really selling this like split analogy, but I know what I mean.
No, it's resonating with me perfectly, Katie. So I know what you mean right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a runner up.
Yeah, they feel kind of to me like, oh, yeah, I think Damian Lillard deserves a fifth place MVP vote this season type of team for this this award. Certainly in the conversation, probably not near the heavy hitters because, again, they have Gordon Hayward on the team. That kind of cuts into it all. I think a development from the last week lends even further credence to the idea that the Cavaliers are actually the rightful award winners here, which bums me out as someone who spent the last half decade being terrified and angered by the Cavaliers all the time. They're undeniably cool now, and they got even undeniably cooler by bringing in Jose Calderon to be their someone in the front office. I don't know if it's just like their ham specialist or if he's actually doing scouting work or management work. He's in the front office in some capacity, and that is really, really cool because Jose Calderon rocks, and I think, yeah, that to me clinches it. The Cavaliers are the coolest team in the league so far this year. And it pains me to say it, Katie, not a fan of this, but it's just the way things are. And you have to be objective about this. And they are undeniably extremely cool. Should we move on to the next award, Katie?
Yes.
Cool. Corniest team, a whole other end of the spectrum here. This is an award you don't want to win, but we got to hand it out because it's important. And it really sort of tells us a lot about the teams throughout the league and which ones you should be avoiding. Do you have a pick here for corniest team in the NBA?
Probably the Lakers.
Yeah, that's the chalk answer, but it's probably the right answer.
Sometimes it's obvious.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Lakers for sure were on my short list. I also think the Blazers kind of stand out to me here. Like, you got the Neil Olshey shit and the firing that happened earlier in the year under the stupid circumstances. You got the Chauncey Billups nonsense. This might just be, like, the most, like, malignant team conversation, which is an award we're not handing out, but maybe we should. Maybe that's one of those ones that goes out the night before the Grammys or whatever. But the Blazers, they feel like, to me... You ever in like grade 6 or 7, when you started having boyfriends and girlfriends, was there ever like a couple that their drama played out and it kind of affected the mood of the rest of the class at all times? That kind of feels like the Blazers to me, where it's just they're bumming everybody out, even though it's really just a them problem. But like they're bringing in all these other teams with trade rumors. The Sixers are somehow involved. Chris Haynes is doing reporting all the time. There's like constant sort of mixed messaging. It feels in many ways like Chris Haynes is the sort of avenue between the two sides, Lillard and the Blazers, much like, you know, you might have been the avenue between a feuding boyfriend and girlfriend in seventh grade when you're at camp. They feel very corny to me, Katie. Is there any credence to this one as the Blazers being the corniest team in the league?
No, I hear what you're saying. I have never experienced that directly with like other people's drama kind of flowing into my world or like affecting it too much. But I hear what you're saying.
It's mostly when you get the popular kids that were in a relationship, but yeah.
Right. I mean, I feel like we're working through some latent baggage here for you. That's okay. No, I'm going to still stick with, I think there's something a little bit more like nefarious almost with the Blazers, right?
Yeah.
To be fair. Corny yeah. for me. So I'm going to stick with the Lakers.
Yeah, I think ultimately Lakers is the correct answer. I just wanted to throw another option out there. But the Lakers are just knocking down these contenders one by one like they're Mike Tyson and Punch-Out. Let's move on to the coolest player, Katie. We discussed this at length recently. I think that was more of a who's the coolest player in general overall. This is a season-specific award. This is no lifetime achievement stuff. Is there anybody who stood out to you this season as being objectively the coolest player in the NBA? It could just be who we talked about a couple weeks ago. It could just be PJ Tucker or Klay Thompson, but maybe someone over the course of 41 games to begin the year has surpassed those guys. What say you, Katie?
Yeah, I don't know actually if I would say that it's PJ just because I think PJ, he is the overall coolest player.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's a lot of candidates.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm going to be a little bit of a homer about it. I'm going to say Gary Trent Jr.
Hell yeah. I mean, the outfits he's been busting out while out with injury over the last 6 games certainly are helping his cause here in a very big way. You know, from the full body poncho to like the green button-up shirt with no buttons and shorts he was rocking a couple nights ago with a bucket hat. Like, the man is cool beyond the understanding of us mere plebes. So I think that's a really, really good pick. I mean, again, Ja Morant's kind of like the chalk answer here. He might just be the coolest player in the league in perpetuity until he retires at this point. He's incredible. And everyone seems to love him and all of that. He's right in there. You know, I'm having a hard time finding anyone from the Western Conference who I deem to be cool. It's just like a lot of teams just like kind of going through the motions, being emotional. I mean, Nikola Jokic, I think, probably it comes through for me. And I'm not here to say that emotions aren't cool. That I should not say that at all. I think that would offend your sensibilities, Katie. But I think it's a very sort of arduous collection of teams right now at West. Jokic is there for me. Jaw's there for me. In the Eastern Conference, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with DeMar. It's hard to go wrong with Jared Allen. But are any of those names sort of sinking in for you, Katie, or are you going to go with your original selection?
DeMar's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I'll stick with Gary, though.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not going to argue on that one either, because Gary Trent Jr. rocks. We've got more players to come up to next, and more awards to come up to next on the other side of the break here, Katie. We're going to dig into the corniest player in the league. We're going to dig into the biggest ghoul, best mascot performance, and a whole bunch more. That's coming up in just one second here on the mid-season version of the Ubbies. All right, Katie, we continue on with the mid-season edition of the Ubbies here on Basketball with the next award to be handed out, which is for the corniest player in the NBA. We've done coolest and corniest teams. We've done coolest player. We're going to round out the quartet with corniest player. Who do you got as the NBA's corny man this year?
LeBron. It's got to be LeBron. Yeah? James. Yeah.
I'm going to disagree on this one. Yes, he's been stupid and dumb about like vaccine stuff, or not vaccine stuff, just COVID stuff in general. I'm going Luka Doncic. He's just not an enjoyable dude to watch play basketball. And he's on the Mavericks, which sort of adds to the corn quotient for him. But he's just like constantly bitching, like never has committed a foul in his life, has only ever been fouled when he drives to the basket, apparently, in his eyes. Like, it's just an exhausting experience to watch Luka Doncic. And I hate it because he's so talented and so good. But he just really, like, I think he does to me what Chris Paul used to do to some people. And I always appreciated Chris Paul and loved him. But for me, like, the complaining from Luka is next level. And it's not really earned. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, you've lost a couple of first round series where you gave the Clippers some fright. Good for you. You haven't earned, like, this leash to be this much of a dick all the time. Maybe I'm being harsh to Luka Doncic here, but am I at all hitting on something here with Luka being the corniest guy in the league so far?
Pretty corny, I gotta say, but I'm unswayed.
Yeah, okay. Let me bring you another one. Again, LeBron's a very difficult one to knock down because he's been corny as hell, and kind of that's his general state of being. What about Jason Tatum on the Boston Celtics? You know,
no.
He's not shooting, not scoring very well. He, you know, this team continues to kind of always have this air of, do these guys even like each other, kind of hanging over it? Tatum is, you know, he will do wonderful things. He will have incredible sequences where he puts up big buckets, but then the Celtics continue to just kind of be very, very boring and non-exciting and kind of shitty. They're 500, so maybe it's not even that bad, but they feel just like kind of broken. And I don't know if that's on Jason Tatum at all, but it feels like maybe it kind of is. He would be one, and then his St. Louis pal, Bradley Beal, would also be on my list, because I think Bradley Beal is perpetually on the list of corniest players. The man who will hit a three to put his team down by 11 and talk as though he just hit a game-winning three in a game seven of a playoff series. He's the biggest front-runner in the NBA to me. Always found it to be very corny. Those are my two other contenders for LeBron James. What say you?
No, the Tatum thing is too sad. I don't find him corny actually at all, which is a bit of like a, you know, coming around for me. But, and I think you can't blame a team. Corniness doesn't necessarily mean, like, you can't blame a team's performance on that, you know?
Right.
There's some other stuff going on with the Celtics. So no, I disagree with that one. I don't know, man. I still am going to say LeBron.
Look, there's nothing wrong with saying LeBron here. I'm merely offering other options, and I think we can settle on LeBron. Because if Bradley Beal's not going to move you off of it, then I think it's kind of a fruitless endeavor for me to go forward with any other options, because I think Bradley Beal, for me, would be my pick. But we'll go with you, Katie, because you're smarter than me, frankly. Let's move on to the next one here. The biggest ghoul in the NBA, the villain of the league so far this year. Maybe it's just Adam Silver, who I believe won it when we did a full season Ubbies last year. We did a full season Ubbies, right? This is not the first time I've said the word Ubbies on this podcast, but with biggest ghoul, who are you settling in on this one, Katie?
You know, I feel kind of torn doing this just because I think it's like fair to always give this to Adam Silver, because then you're not, you know, it's not so black and white with players, because they're obviously not existing in ghoulishness in like perpetuity. But I might feel inclined to give this to Kyrie Irving, honestly. And ooh, I don't want to discount all the good things that he's done. But I also feel like that caveat is shrinking. And his ghoulishness, I'll be clear, is not so much like a pointed ghoulishness like Silver's, right? But there is just like a certain ghoulishness to someone who behaves so like seemingly willfully ignorantly, but then who at the same time kind of turns around and, you know, is just always like very, he's a smart person. So it is weird. It is weird to me to just like be perpetually acting dumb about things. And I think there's like a real cost to some of the things that he's done this season.
Yeah. There's a real like calculated nature to his ghoulishness in a way that like some people just, hey, that's how they are. And there's not changing. There's no changing it. And that's just the way they are. I don't think it has to be this way with Kyrie Irving. And I do think of all the things the NBA has allowed to happen over the last 2 years, and a lot of them have been real bad, Katie, I think for me, the sort of single worst, at least messaging thing that the NBA has done, and I guess this partly goes to Adam Silver, this partly is on the Nets as well for just like the horrible timing of it all. But in the middle of the absolute peak of the league having half of its fucking players out and teams not being able to put together rosters and hardship guys playing significant minutes and games being lost, and obviously in the real world, hospital counts going way through the roof and things getting super terrifying there in late December, that was the time the Nets decided, you know what? Let's just bring him back. And I think allowing him to come back at the height of everything, even though it's allowed for him to play in road games, always has been, it was always the Nets' decision to not let him be a part-time player. Just the optics of the timing of the decision was so fucking gross to me that I think, like, for me, Ghoul of the Year not just goes to Kyrie Irving, but also to Sean Marks and whoever else was in that room making that call for the Nets, because they really only did it because they had some injuries. It was like, oh, we got a lot of guys out. I guess now is the time where it benefits us to have Kyrie around for half the games. And I just think it's bullshit. I think they shouldn't be able to pick and choose that shit. And their timing of that decision was just so tone deaf and stupid that I think they deserve the crown pretty comfortably. Great call by you, Katie, bringing up Kyrie. Like, you're smarter than this, dude. Stop fucking doing this bullshit. That's all I got. Any last thoughts there before we move on to the next one, Katie?
No, that's pretty good. It's the Nets. Okay.
It's the Nets in general. We move on to the best performance by a mascot. Now this is like the best actor or actress award, the biggest shit, the best picture, all of that. It's coming down. We've got a little early in the runtime for this, but that's fine. Katie, mascots are having a time this year. Obviously, we talked a lot about the Raptor last week doing his thing for no fans. Maybe that gives him extra consideration. We saw the Coyote just this week double down on Devin Booker's fear of being distracted to the free throw line in a full building, bringing in a cone of silence for those behind the basket. Really, really great stuff from the Coyote. Really good vision that he had while on peyote there to go and do that in game. Do you have a favorite mascot performance this season? We also talked last week about Benny the Bull being part of a drag number. Like, there's a lot to dig into this year, very recently as well, with some great mascot stuff. Do you have a favorite performance by a mascot this season, Katie?
I think I would give it to the Raptor just because that performance with Devin Booker was quite cerebral. And yeah. I think, you know, at first unintentional, but then like a good catch to go down into the tunnel and just like kneel there. somewhat menacingly. So I think, you know, like a film performance where, you know, it's like an actor in an understated role and you're not really thinking about it that much while you're watching the movie. But then once you've finished the movie, it's all that you can think about. That's what it reminds me of.
It's basically like anytime Elliot Gould is in something, is what I'm thinking about afterwards. I think the Raptor is the winner here as well. And to me, it's sort of similar. You know how sometimes there'll be like a movie concept that's just never been done before at the Oscars and it just has to win? Like, I think of Boyhood, for example, the movie that's shot over like 10 years, just chronicling the growth of this boy. It's not even necessarily like a transcendent performance by anybody. It's a fine movie, but the concept of it, of like tracking the same person's life, is really fascinating and cool. And so I think this is sort of the thing with the Raptor, is what the Raptor is doing right now is kind of unprecedented. Doing mascot performance, keeping in character, even with no fans to entertain, is a really difficult and impressive thing to do. And I think just for the sheer novelty of the performance, he's got to be it. But I do think Benny the Bull and the Drag Number is probably a close second for me. That rocks. but I think we're in agreement here on the Raptor being the best performance by a mascot. And I don't think this is at all colored by our own personal biases. I think it's a very, very earned and justifiable win. We move on to the next one here, Katie. The next award we have is the Best Friend. The Best Friend, one that you posed to me to include in the rundown. So I'll give it to you. Who do you have as the best friend in the NBA so far this year?
Yeah, this is a friendship that is new to me. So, I mean, apologies if this has been going on long term. But D'Anthony Melton and John Conchar are like, you can find clips of them mic'd up and compilations of them mic'd up. And the way they talk to each other, it's like almost shy, romantic. Like, I don't know, it's really cute. It's like two people who are, you can almost see this arc of their friendship kind of blossoming. They're really supportive of one another. I think they both also got re-signed at the same time, which is nice. Yeah, they're like, they're surprise winners for me.
Right. I mean, I did not have that one on my radar in any way, but I think you are the expert on this subject matter more than I. So I will certainly cede to your opinion on this one. And I don't think there's anything else to really go in here. That's a wonderful pick and some guys getting some love who maybe we've never mentioned on this podcast before, which is a cool thing. Let's move on then to the best beef. Katie, it's been a beefy season. You've got Isaiah Beef Stew Stewart and LeBron James. You've got Nikola Jokic and Markieff Morris. I believe Morris is still out of the lineup with whiplash from when Jokic pushed him like 2.5 months ago. Not the best look for Jokic, but boy, that is a good beef. Feels like Jimmy Butler's got a beef with everybody at some point, which is good. That's kind of the feature of Jimmy Butler. I'm probably missing other beefs as well, if we're going to pluralize it. What is your favorite NBA beef so far this season? What wins the award?
I didn't really like the Isaiah Stewart one. I just like that. I was like worried about him, you know?
He was a little manic.
I thought, no, not even that. I thought LeBron was actually acting kind of corny in that way as well. So I wouldn't put it on Stewart because he got hit in the face pretty hard and looked pretty intentionally is still where I'll side with that. So probably for me, it is going to be Jokic and Markieff Morris. Mm-hmm. Wait, Marcus or Mark? No, Marcus Morris.
It was Markieff, yeah.
It was Markieff. because Jokic's brothers were involved, which really heightened the intrigue for me, mostly because I'm very interested, again, in their fashion. I really wonder how hurt is he, or is his pride just hurt a lot that he hasn't been back in playing yet. And when he does come back, you know, all eyes are going to be on that game. To me, that ranks the beef pretty high.
That's a good one for sure. Very violent beef, but hey, Markieff Morris probably had it coming, if we're being totally honest. I hope he's not continually hurt. I hope he recovers soon, but you know, he did do like a jumping air kick at Jokic as well in an unnecessary circumstance. I'm going to go for me. My pick, I think, is Daryl Morey versus the concept of trade value. Because my favorite thing of this season, sort of subplot, is the odd reporting you get on different things that Daryl Morey is asking for in exchange for Ben Simmons. And they just get increasingly more insane, even though Simmons's trade value clearly is not going anywhere up. It's only going down or staying the same. And it's threatening, frankly, to derail an unbelievable MVP level season from Joel Embiid, because they just are not going to get anything out of Ben Simmons or the spot on the roster that he occupies, because Daryl Morey continues to ask for like 9 first round picks and all of the good team's best players for Ben Simmons. It's bananas. Does this one at all register for you, Katie, in the best beef conversation?
Sure, but it's like kind of an abstract beef, but that's all right.
Sure, sure. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I think, you know, the Jokic-Morris one still has some resolving to be done. The fallout still has not been totally realized. I think we got to go with that as our early pick here at the midseason point, midway point of the season. We move on to our final award of the year. It is, or I guess of the half point of the season. It is the poster of the year, Katie. Who do you think has been the very best social media poster across the NBA this season? I am going to cede full authority on the decision-making process to you here, because we know I usually just take my poster of the week from your basketball feelings posts, because I'm far less on basketball internet than you are, and that is one of my great flaws. Katie, who's your poster of the year through half the season?
Poster of the half year. You know, it might be Jimmy Butler, just because, you know, and I don't always share these through the Basketball Feelings Instagram account, but
sure,
he's every day like making fun of his teammates, or if not posting like very well produced videos of himself in his home, just like doing regular things. Like the other day, mm-hmm, he was walking down his stairs and he was like posing. And he was like making fun of himself for posing like he was going to the prom and taking prom pictures of himself. He's like done really serious. His latest was like a really serious video. He was talking about biking. He was talking about Peloton and like how serious people were about Peloton. And he was like, but have you ever seen this kind of Peloton? And I think it was his daughter's tiny little bike. And he's holding it and he's wearing this crazy gymnast, like almost like a wrestler one. Like one piece singlet, I think, mm-hmm, they're called, where the like, mm-hmm, dip is super low in the chest. He's just got like a wild outfit on, and he's talking really seriously about working out intensely on this baby's bike. And you know, like he'll always post stuff about making fun of Kyle Lowry, making fun of Bam, making fun of Tyler Hero. So I think it's just Jimmy, because it's like quiet, persistent presence versus, mm-hmm, like a few here and there just like huge posts.
Gotcha. I think that's a wonderful reasoning, and I think Jimmy Butler a very rightful poster of the year winner. I'm surprised you didn't go Klay Thompson, Katie. I gotta ask you, is Klay slowing down his posting since returning to playing basketball, or is he still living boat life and making sure people know about it?
I think he's slowed down a bit, because I think, you know, to Klay, like this isn't surprising, but Klay's whole thing now that he's playing again is like that's where his focus is, and I appreciate that. I think he was sort of, you know, he found a couple hobbies to fill up the void when he couldn't play basketball, and now, you know, his mindset's just on basketball, and that's cool. Maybe he's doing this other stuff in his downtime, but I could also just see him, you know, I think he was using it as an outlet also for like humor and jokes and, you know, just like a bit of a release valve. Probably right. For some of his being bummed out that he wasn't playing. So he slowed down a bit. The only reason I didn't give it to Klay, because all his posts have been phenomenal, but again, they've been more of like, they haven't been as like steady as Jimmy's.
Sure. Gotcha. I think Jimmy Butler is a rightful winner, and it's going to take a lot to take it away from him. the next time we do the Ubbies update, which will be after the postseason, Katie. We will dive back in. We will see. We will keep tabs on who won each of these awards, of course. And we will see, hey, did they hang on to their title or did something supplant them over the back part of the season and playoffs? But we will leave it there for now and move in now, Katie, to the segment where we wrap up every show with. It is the poster of the week, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days, not so much from the last year. I'll go first here. Again, one I've stolen from your basketball feelings stories. Kevin Love posted a photo of Chetty Osman in front of a like a skeleton replica. Looks like he's at the Body Works thing at the Ontario Science Center from when we were kids, or when I was a kid. What's going on here, Katie? Do you have any more detail on this one? Either way, I think it illustrates what we talked about earlier with the coolest team conversation about Kevin Love kind of being brought back into the good graces of the Cavs franchise and wanting to be part of it, and that's awesome. But what the hell's going on with this Body Works shit?
Well, one, I disagree with you about Kevin Love being cool again, because I don't think that's true. I think the team is kind of carrying him, but whatever. That picture is just in the locker room, Sean. I imagine this is a little skeleton on wheels that the trainers kind of use or to like illustrate what they're talking about with players. The coolest thing to me about this picture and like kind of the funniest thing and why I liked it is Chetty Osman's headband pushing his hair back and how unprepared he looks for the photo, which to me is maybe one of the only things I like about it, because it says like, as people, especially men, as men get older, their ability to take a good photo just depletes rapidly. So you get this kind of mid action, really not posed look, which I appreciate in context and when it's not me.
Yeah. that is, I guess we go on to your poster of the week, Katie. Great summation of what's going on in the locker room there. Again, totally did not realize that was a locker room in Cleveland. But who's your poster of the week?
Mine was close, a close tie, but like the runner up, I still got to give him a shout out. Was probably Udonis Haslam, who had a welcome back. He like made a welcome back Bam sign for when Bam and Bio came back this week, and he held it. I thought it was really cute. But
that's why you pay him to be on your roster, man.
Yeah. That was going to be my pick until I saw this morning. Jaren Jackson Jr. posted a picture of Stephen Allen carrying him as he did like earlier this week, and he captioned it, "I was first."
Stephen Adams, you mean? Yes.
What?
You said Stephen Allen.
No, Jaren. Stephen Allen. But Jaren Jackson Jr. posted a picture of Stephen Allen carrying him.
But his name's Stephen Adams.
Stephen Adams. Sorry, Stephen Allen's a clothing brand. Yeah, Stephen Adams. Sorry, I kept saying Stephen Allen.
No, that's all good. That's all good. I you got Jared Allen on the brain. That's fine. We all have Jared Allen on the brain.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's where I was shifting. Stephen Adams carrying Jaren Jackson Jr. Jaren Jackson Jr. captioning it, "I was first."
Fantastic stuff, Katie. A wonderful way to round out today's episode of the podcast. And that's going to do it. Thank you, as always, to everyone for supporting us and being our listeners and followers, subscribers, all of that. Please go to patreon.com/abasketball with two H's, and you can subscribe over there. $4 US, $5.50 Canadian gets you in. You'll be part of our little Patreon community and join the ranks of our favorite human beings alive. Katie, anything you would like to promote this week in addition? I mean, you can promote your star thing again if you'd like, or maybe there's something else.
Yeah, sure. I will promote that star feature on Marie Holloway just because I really enjoyed writing it and speaking with Marie and showcasing Marie. So that's on the star's website now, because it might honestly just be too late to buy the Sunday paper. That's fine. And what else? Oh, yeah. On Dishes and Dimes, we had a chance to chat with two of the winners of the Wayne Embry Fellowship for this season. Yeah, it was like a special episode that we got to do, and that's on anywhere you get podcasts. So that's out today.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And everyone go check out Katie's work. As always, it's the best thing in the world. You're the best writer. Honestly, Katie, you might be the best basketball writer. I think it's a conversation now. And I think everyone should bow down at the altar to Katie Heindel. Anyway, that's going to do it. You can find me over on Locked On Raptors every day on YouTube. You can go subscribe there. Did a really fun episode today where we went through, or I guess Wednesday, where we went through the preseason over-under picks that myself, Vivek Jacob, and Sahal Abdi made, and checked in on the halfway point. That's always a good episode, so go check that out. We got our pal Samson Folk coming up on Friday's episode too to talk about his piece on Scotty Barnes. So if you're a Raptors person, we got plenty of stuff cooking over there for you. And I guess that's all we got. Thank you, as always, to producer Greg, who's in this week, for producer Dylan, kicking ass, making us sound so, so good. And thank you for supporting the podcast. We'll talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball.